Chapter 15. Gentle Face. Ashley, we have been married nearly 5 years, and I have never challenged you with what I know perfectly well the parentage of Dorothy. Never have you, Philippa dear. Though I have seen that you knew from the first. From the first, as to her father, not as to her mother. Her I did not know for some time, but I know now. You have discovered that too? Says he, without much surprise. Could I help it? Very well, that being so, I have thought it over, and I have spoken to Dorothy. I agree to her going. I can do no less than grant to the Countess her wish, after her kindness to my her child. Then this self-sacrificing woman went hastily away, that he might not see that her heart was bursting. And thereupon, before they left the city, Dorothy changed her mother and her home. After this, the Countess went away to London for a while, taking Dorothy with her, and the Baronet and his wife returned to their lonely place at Deansleigh Park without her. To renounce Dorothy in the bustle of Bath was a different thing from living without her in this quiet home. One evening Sir Ashley missed his wife from the supper table. Her manner had been so pensive and woeful of late that he immediately became alarmed. He said nothing, but looked about outside the house narrowly, and discerned her form in the park, where recently as he had been accustomed to walk alone. In its lower levels there was a pool fed by a trickling brook, and he reached this spot in time to hear a splash. Running forward, he dimly perceived her light gown floating in the water. To pull her out was the work of a few instants, and bearing her indoors to her room, he undressed her, nobody in the house knowing of the incident but himself. As he had not been immersed long enough to lose her senses, and soon recovered. She owned that as he had done it, because the Contessa had taken away her child, as she persisted in calling Dorothy. Her husband spoke sternly to her, and impressed upon her the weakness of giving way thus, when all that had happened was for the best. She took his reproof meekly, and admitted her fault. After that she became more resigned, but he often caught her in tears over some doll, shoe, or ribbon of Dorothy's, and decided to take her to the north of England for change of air and scene. This was not without its beneficial effect, corporeally no less than mentally, as later events showed, but she still evinced a preternatural sharpness of ear at the most casual mention of the child. When they reached home, the Countess and Dorothy were still absent from the neighboring Fernal Hall, but in a month or two they returned, and a little later Sir Ashley Mottisfont came into his wife's room full of news. Well, would you think it, Philippa? After being so desperate to, about getting Dorothy to be with her. Our neighbor, the Countess, is going to be married again. It is to somebody as he has met in London. Lady Mottisfont was much surprised, as he had never dreamt of such an event. The conflict for the possession of Dorothy's person had obscured the possibility of it. Yet what more likely, the Countess being still under 30, and so good-looking. What is of still more interest to us, or to you, continued her husband, is a kind offer as he has made. She is willing that you should have Dorothy back again. Seeing what a grief the loss of her has been to you, she will try to do without her. It is not for that. It is not to oblige me, said Lady Mottisfont quickly. One can see well enough what it is for. Well, never mind. Beggars mustn't be choosers. The reason or motive is nothing to us, so that you obtain your desire. I am not a beggar any longer, said Lady Mottisfont, with proud mystery. What do you mean by that? Lady Mottisfont hesitated. However, it was only too plain that she did not now jump at a restitution of one for whom some months before as he had been breaking her heart. The explanation of this change of mood became apparent some little time farther on. Lady Mathisfand, after 5 years of wedded life, was expecting to become a mother, and the aspect of many things was greatly altered in her view. Among the more important changes was that of no longer feeling Dorothy to be absolutely indispensable to her existence. Meanwhile, in view of her coming marriage, the Countess decided to abandon the remainder of her term at Fernal Hall and return to her pretty little house in town. But she could not do this quite so quickly as he had expected, and half a year more lapsed before she finally quitted the neighborhood, the interval being passed in alternations between the country and London. Prior to her last departure, she had an interview with Sir Ashley Mathisfand, and it occurred 3 days after his wife had presented him with a son and heir. "I wanted to speak to you," said the Countess, looking him luminously in the face, "about the dear foundling I have adopted temporarily, and thought to have adopted permanently. But my marriage makes it too risky. I thought it might be that," he answered, regarding her steadfastly back again, and observing two tears come slowly into her eyes as she heard her own voice describe Dorothy in those words. "Don't criticize me," she said hastily, and recovering herself, went on. "If Lady Mathisfand could take her back again, as I suggested, it would be better for me, and certainly no worse for Dorothy. To everyone but ourselves she is but a child I have taken a fancy to, and Lady Mathisfand coveted her so much, and was very reluctant to let her go. I am sure she will adopt her again," she added anxiously. "I will sound her afresh," said the Baronet. "You leave Dorothy behind for the present?" "Yes. Although I go away, I do not give up the house for another month." He did not speak to his wife about the proposal till some few days after, when Lady Mathisfand had nearly recovered, and news of the Countess's marriage in London had just reached them. He had no sooner mentioned Dorothy's name than Lady Mathisfand showed symptoms of disquietude. "I have not acquired any dislike of Dorothy," she said, "but I feel that there is one nearer to me now." Dorothy chose the alternative of going to the Countess. You must remember, when I put it to her, as between the Countess and myself. But, my dear Philippa, how can you argue thus about a child, and that child our Dorothy? Not ours, said his wife, pointing to the cot. "Ours is here." "What then, Philippa?" he said, surprised. "You won't have her back, after nearly dying of grief at the loss of her?" "I cannot argue, dear Ashley. I should prefer not to have the responsibility of Dorothy again. Her place is filled now." Her husband sighed, and went out of the chamber. There had been a previous arrangement that Dorothy should be brought to the house on a visit that day, but instead of taking her up to his wife, he did not inform Lady Mathisfand of the child's presence. He entertained her himself as well as he could, and accompanied her into the park, where they had a ramble together. Presently he sat down on the root of an elm, and took her upon his knee. "Between this husband and this baby, little Dorothy, you who had two homes are left out in the cold," he said. "Can't I go to London with my pretty mama?" said Dorothy, perceiving from his manner that there was a hitch somewhere. "I am afraid not, my child. She only took you to live with her because she was lonely, you know. Then can't I stay at Deansleigh Park with my other mama and you?" "I am afraid that cannot be done either," said he sadly. "We have a baby in the house now." He closed the reply by stooping down and kissing her, there being a tear in his eye. "Then nobody wants me," said Dorothy pathetically. "Oh yes, somebody wants you," he assured her. "Where would you like to live besides?" apostrophe apostrophe, Dorothy's experience as being rather limited. She mentioned the only other place in the world that she was acquainted with, the cottage of the villager who had taken care of her before Lady Mottisfont had removed her to the manor house. Yes, that's where you'll be best off and most independent, apostrophe, he answered. And I'll come to see you, my dear girl, and bring you pretty things. And perhaps you'll be just as happy there. Apostrophe, apostrophe, nevertheless, when the change came, and Dorothy was handed over to the kind cottage woman, the poor child missed the luxurious roominess of Fernal Hall and Deansleigh. And for a long time her little feet, which had been accustomed to carpets and oak floors, suffered from the cold of the stone flags on which it was now her lot to live and to play, while chilblains came upon her fingers with washing at the pump. But thicker shoes with nails in them somewhat remedied the cold feet, and her complaints and tears on this and other scores diminished to silence as she became inured anew to the hardships of the farm cottage, and she grew up robust if not handsome. She was never altogether lost sight of by Sir Ashley, though she was deprived of the systematic education which had been devised and begun for her by Lady Mottisfont, as well as by her other mamma, the enthusiastic Countess. The latter soon had other Dorothys to think of, who occupied her time and affection as fully as Lady Mottisfont's were occupied by her precious boy. In the course of time the doubly desired and doubly rejected Dorothy married, I believe, a respectable road contractor the same, if I mistake not, who repaired and improved the old highway running from Wintoncester southwesterly through the New Forest, and in the heart of this worthy man of business the poor girl found the nest which had been denied her by her own flesh and blood of higher degree. Several of the listeners wished to hear another story from the sentimental member after this, but he said that he could recall nothing else at the moment, and that it seemed to him as if his friend on the other side of the fireplace had something to say from the look of his face. The member alluded to was a respectable churchwarden, with a sly chink to one eyelid possibly the result of an accident, and a regular attendant at the club meetings. He replied that his looks had been mainly caused by his interest in the two ladies of the last story, apparently women of strong motherly instincts, even though they were not genuinely staunch in their tenderness. The tale had brought to his mind an instance of a firmer affection of that sort on the paternal side, in a nature otherwise culpable. As for telling the story, his manner was much against him, he feared, but he would do his best, if they wished. Here the president interposed with a suggestion that as it was getting late in the afternoon it would be as well to adjourn to their respective inns and lodgings for dinner, after which those who cared to do so could return and resume these curious domestic traditions for the remainder of the evening, which might otherwise prove irksome enough. The curator had told him that the room was at their service. The churchwarden, who was beginning to feel hungry himself, readily acquiesced, and the club separated for an hour and a half. Then the faithful ones began to drop in again, among whom were not the president. Neither came the rural dean, nor the two curates, though the colonel, and the man of family, cigars in mouth, were good enough to return, having found their hotel dreary. The museum had no regular means of illumination, and a solitary candle, less powerful than the rays of the fire, was placed on the table, also bottles and glasses, provided by some thoughtful member. The chink-eyed churchwarden, now thoroughly primed, proceeded to relate in his own terms what was in substance as follows, while many of his listeners smoked. Dame the fifth, the Lady Isenway, by the churchwarden, in the reign of His Most Excellent Majesty King George III, defender of the faith, and of the American colonies, there lived in a fair manor place, so Leland called it in his day, as I have been told, in one of the greenest bits of woodland between Bristol and the city of Exonbury, a young lady who resembled some aforesaid ones in having many talents and exceeding great beauty. With these gifts she combined a somewhat imperious temper and arbitrary mind, though her experience of the world was not actually so large as her conclusive manner would have led the stranger to suppose. Being an orphan, she resided with her uncle, who, though he was fairly considerate as to her welfare, left her pretty much to herself. Now it chanced that, when this lovely young lady was about 19, she, being a fearless horsewoman, was riding, with only a young lad as an attendant, in one of the woods near her uncle's house, and, in trotting along, her horse stumbled over the root of a felled tree. She slipped to the ground, not seriously hurt, and was assisted home by a gentleman who came in view at the moment of her mishap. It turned out that this gentleman, a total stranger to her, was on a visit at the house of a neighboring landowner. He was of Dutch extraction, and occasionally came to England on business or pleasure from his plantations in Guyana, on the north coast of South America, where he usually resided. On this account he was naturally, but little known in Wessex, and was but a slight acquaintance of the gentleman at whose mansion he was a guest. However, the friendship between him and the Emirs, as the uncle and niece were named, warmed and warmed by degrees, there being but few folk of note in the vicinity at that time, which made a newcomer, if he were at all sociable and of good credit, always sure of a welcome. A tender feeling, as it is called by the romantic, sprang up between the two young people, which ripened into intimacy. Anderling, the foreign gentleman, was of an amorous temperament, and, though he endeavored to conceal his feeling, it could be seen that Miss Maria Emir had impressed him rather more deeply than would be represented by a scratch upon a stone. He seemed absolutely unable to free himself from her fascination, and his inability to do so, much as he tried, evidently thinking he had not the ghost of a chance with her, gave her the pleasure of power, though she more than sympathized when she overheard him heaving his deep-drawn sighs privately to himself, as he supposed. After prolonging his visit by every conceivable excuse in his power, he summoned courage, and offered her his hand and his heart. Being in no way disinclined to him, though not so fervid as he, and her uncle making no objection to the match, she consented to share his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.